Environment and Natural Resources Committee will come to order. Representative Wagenius, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have not.
Representative Poppy moves the minutes from March 16th. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails, and minutes are adopted. Okay, members, we've got a few bills to get through here today. I'm going to move House File 3346. This is my bill, and
Mr. Hurst? I think it's at 3346?
3346, what did I say?
I'm looking at the wrong. You did it right.
3436. Sorry, members, 3436. Okay. I will move House File 3436, be recommended to pass, and be re-referred to the Ag, Environment, and Natural Resources Finance Committee. And Mr. Hurst. Please state your name for the record and who you represent and explain our bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Hurst. I'm the registered lobbyist representing the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association.
Mr. Hurst, would you like me to move the amendment to get it in the shape that we'd like, and then you can explain it from there?
Sounds very good. Thank you.
Members, I would move the 1255 amendment to get it in the shape that we'd like. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Mr. Hurst.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, House File 3436 actually deals with two issues. The first issue pertains to the handling of NSF checks that deputy registrars from time to time are presented with in their day-to-day activities. The second part of it deals with the manner in which boat titles are handled. First of all, members of the committee, the deputy registrars around the state, of which there are, I believe, 172 offices, act as agents of the state primarily for two different state agencies. Those two agencies being the Department of Public Safety and their Driver and Vehicle Services Division, as well as the Department of Natural Resources. The bill that we have before you basically is an attempt to give us some assistance in the handling of NSF checks. And what this does is it mirrors the practice that we currently enjoy with the Department of Public Safety and the handling of NSF checks with motor vehicle registration transactions. Deputy registrars across the state are a rather unique office. Their fees are set by statute. We cannot raise our fees independently without the actions of the state legislature, which explains from time to time why I run around the Capitol here seeking fee increases. I'm happy to state that I'm not seeking a fee increase this year. However, we would like some consideration on how we handle these NSF checks. And also, I should mention to you members that due to certain realities of the business, deputy registrars are forced to take transactions only by cash or by check. We cannot take credit cards because of the handling fees that are associated with credit card transactions. Those fees would only be charged to the deputies as far as their handling fees that they collect, that they survive on to pay their rent and their salaries and insurance and everything. And so we are not in a position, unfortunately, to take credit cards, even though we would like to. Thus, from time to time, we do have a problem with NSF checks. And even after our best efforts to try and collect upon these individuals that pass bad checks on to us, unfortunately, there are some individuals that, for lack of a better word, basically make up with having free registration, which is certainly not fair to the rest of the law-abiding citizens of this state. Quite honest, in brief, I would also like to draw to your attention, there's a one-page handout, two-sided, for you to take a look at. It basically explains what we're looking for in this legislation in regards to suspension of registrations. And that's all we're asking out of the department, is to work with us to suspend these registrations. The onus of collection still rests with the individual deputy registrar office. But this would be yet another tool so that if these individuals were to return to re-register their vehicles at a later point when they come up for renewal, at least the system would be flagged so that the individual would have to still make good on the past due bad check amount. This would apply to off-highway motorcycles, off-road vehicles, snowmobiles, including snowmobile trail stickers, ATVs, and all types of watercraft. I also mentioned there's a second part of this bill pertaining to boat titling. Interestingly enough, I'm sure you're familiar that if you take out a loan for your motor vehicle, after you've purchased the vehicle, the Department of Public Safety in that case issues the title to you as the owner, and there's a box check that says there's a secured interest party on that registration title. It is exactly the opposite with watercraft. For boats, if I were to go and take out a loan for a boat and then purchase that boat, the registration title for that boat currently goes to the lending institution, and the lending institution hangs on to that until it is satisfied, and then the title is then transferred back to the owner. What the second half of this bill does is, again, it mirrors the practice that is currently in existence for motor vehicle, whereby the owner receives the title, but of course in the case of a boat, there would be a checkbox for the secured interest on that title. With that, I will conclude my remarks, and also joining me is Grace Wachler-Roritz. She is the president of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association, and she is also the deputy from White Bear Lake, Minnesota. And certainly if there are questions before I turn it over to her, I welcome those at this time.
Representative Wagner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We don't have a scope of the problem because you haven't told us how many of these checks there are each year.
I thank you for that question, and I apologize for not taking that into consideration with my testimony. There are a smattering of these cases every year, and we typically see a rise in these towards January when a number of these renewals come due, as well as in June. And I was just made aware, for example, that one deputy registrar earlier this year took in a check that was close to $1,600 that was bounced. This was a unique case in that the transaction happened outside of the state, and so therefore when it came to be registered in the state of Minnesota, the sales tax had to be collected in addition to that. And so this particular deputy, for a case in point, is sitting on a $1,600 check that he's trying to collect on. Fortunately, that is not common. However, I think Grace will tell you that, will explain further, that there is definitely a concern that we are going to be taking more of these types of transactions due to some changes on the ELS program. And that certainly raises our concern that this could happen more frequently. And certainly without certain assistance, such as a suspension, we certainly do not want to see this problem growing in existence.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I'm going to assume that the next witness is going to give me an answer to the question.
Okay. Proportionately, my name is Grace Wachler-Roth. I'm the president of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association and also the deputy of the city of White Bear Lake.
Welcome to the meeting.
Thank you. Yes, it may not be as high as you anticipate or would figure, but our NSF checks are proportional to the amount of business that we do for DNR. Typically what we do is we process all our transactions on the electronic licensing system. And once a week that money is swept and directly deposited to the state. Prior to this system, when an individual purchases a boat, for example, and sales tax is due, that particular payment of sales tax was a check written to the Department of Revenue, and then we would forward it on. Now, because of the system, we now have to deposit that money, collect the money, and it's swept out of our accounts. As this particular deputy office illustrated, those fees can be very large. So that's what we are more concerned about, is these large one-time only type situations that could actually be very detrimental to any office that has to carry that type of NSF check. So no, they're not that high, but enough to make a serious impact on our well-being.
Representative Wagenia?
I still don't have a sense of how many for a deputy registrar.
I do 10% of my business in DNR. 10% of my NSF checks are from DNR. So it's proportional to the amount of work that I do. It's not a lot, but it does occur.
Representative Bill?
Thank you, Chair. The other business that you do, you take checks for that as well, right?
That is correct. And currently, the Department of Motor Vehicle, both for motor vehicle transactions and as well as driver's license, has recognized our needs, and we do have in place the exact same remedy that we're requesting for DNR. We exhaust all avenues to try to collect it. We're only asking the state as a last recourse, if we cannot collect on these, that we ask for assistance by suspending that record. So it's exactly the same of what we do for car registrations as well as driver's license renewals. And you'd be amazed, even with driver's license, I'll get checks bounced for $8.
Representative Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The place of business that I manage, we have a small machine that we subscribe to a service. It's very reasonable. I don't even remember. It's so insignificant in the scheme of things. I don't remember. You stick the check in, it shoots it back out. The company that you subscribe to is now on the hook for the money. It's a check verification service. It looks like an ELS machine.
Mm-hmm.
You stick it in, it reads the little micker thing off there. It instantly checks to see if the funds are available and guarantees the check, as I recall, through the service. And I mean, that could just be an option. I know, as I said, we had just an incredible, this is a liquor store. I used to run a city, and so we have a municipal liquor store. And I mean, let me tell you, if you want to get NSF checks, try a liquor store.
And I appreciate that.
And so we had to buy we got the machine. It is relatively inexpensive. So that's just my thought about that.
We have investigated that option. In fact, I have as well. And the challenge that our profession has is that our fees are set by statute. In a private business, you can adjust your sale price on an item to cover NSF checks or the cost of this machine that you're referring to. We're stuck. We only get $4.50 per transaction. Some is only $2. Some are $7. So when you've got your revenue source is restricted, and you have to pay for manpower and overhead, et cetera, et cetera. You have to make some decisions.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Wagenius's question, and at our business in John's Auto Parts, we have a tiny percentage of our total sales that are bad checks, but one is way too many. And the way I look at a bad check is it's just another way of stealing. And I strongly support this bill because I don't see any reason why people who aren't paying for something should get to keep the benefit of the bargain that they made when part of the bargain is to pay the bill. And the problem is, even though it might be a tiny percentage of your sales or your total revenue as a deputy registrar, the time that it takes to try to collect on bad checks, I think this is something that's needed, it's warranted. People have to get out of their mind that writing a bad check is no big whoop and that there's no penalties, and so I hope we pass this bill.
Thank you, Representative Wagenia.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Asking DNR to do this is asking for a different kind of subsidy. And so I'm trying to sit here and think of maybe alternatives to make sure you get your money. And so I'm curious about why you can't take credit cards, because then you have somebody collecting for you. I have always thought that our Department of Motor Vehicles should do like Wisconsin does, and if you're driving down 94 toward Madison and go just a tad too fast, well, those deputies will pull you over and ask for your credit card. But we don't do that in Minnesota. I think it's a horrible mistake. We take the long and expensive route. So I'm wondering why you don't do credit cards, and is that the remedy to the situation?
Representative Wagenius, I asked that very same question, and Mr. Hurst gave me a very good explanation of that. And Mr. Hurst, would you please explain that to the committee?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman and Representative Wagenius. We would love to take credit cards. However, the plain and simple truth is credit card transactions, the vendors typically charge somewhere between 2-3% of the total transaction. So therefore, because the bulk of the funds that we collect are for the state of Minnesota and those funds go to the state, those charges would then apply only to our filing fees. And take, for example, the gentleman who is stuck with the $1,600 bad check on Zeta. If you take 2% of $1,600, if I'm doing my math real quick, that represents an amount that's about 4 or 5 times the handling fee that we are allowed to keep. And so we lose money on those transactions. And quite honestly, our margins are so thin with the monies that we collect just on the filing fees that we can keep, there's just no room for us to take credit cards. Ideally, we would love to take it if there was some way to charge that back to the customer who chooses to use a credit card, but we can't. And the other thing to keep in mind is there are ways to pass that charge on to the customer, but those have to be either over the internet or over the phone. They cannot be a face-to-face transaction. And unfortunately, deputy registrars operate in a face-to-face transaction world. That's why you can go online and get your motor tabs online using a credit card. It doesn't cost the state because they're allowed to charge that. I would love to find a way to get around that. There is separate legislation being considered by the legislature this year to set up a task force to try and find a way around that so that deputy registrars and others in similar situations can pass that on or can accept credit cards. We hear from our customers all the time that they don't understand why we can't take credit cards, and that's the simple truth.
Representative Wagenius?
But the other side of that is, what about debit cards?
It also applies to debit cards.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. Okay. Members, I think we'll take some other testimony. And if there's anybody else that would like to speak for or against the bill, I know the Minnesota DNR would like to come forward and speak about our bill.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Stick around. We might have to bring you back up. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Bob Meyer, Director of Legislative Affairs at the Department of Natural Resources. The bill before you today, House File 3436, the DNR does have some frustration and does not support the penalties of the licensing parts that we just discussed. The boat titling pieces, Section 6 through Section 8, the DNR doesn't have a problem with that. Our main concern is making us become the debt collection agency for these deputy registrars. They are a mix of public and private registrars that are out there. Some of them are private. I don't know the exact number, but I'm sure we could find out. Besides the fiscal costs we would have to deal with, our biggest fear is having this spill over into the ELS license agents that take care of our game and fish and all of our other licenses that are out there. Currently, we sell about 2.3 million licenses through 1,700 ELS agents throughout the state. You know, you could do the math on that and just think about how much of a full-time equivalent requirement that will take if we have to go down that road. The other thing is that we do accept credit cards at the Department of Natural Resources. We understand that 3% is a part of doing business, and maintaining a secure transaction. And most of our ELS agents out there doing our game of fish licenses also do that. In relationship to the tax issue, we could also go back to, or people could write out two separate checks, one for the Department of Revenue, and then the Department of Revenue would be stuck taking care of the sales tax issue, and one for the registration. So I think we can work around that concern. We do appreciate the work that they do out there and working with them on those issues, but our concern is, first of all, setting the precedent of doing this, understanding the need for a secure business transaction through our alternatives out there, and more importantly, just if this is the right solution or not. Another concern is if you look at the language, we're unclear whether this language would be just for the 3-year registration period or for the time till they went to renew that registration. And also, what happens if the person would just go try to re-register it using cash or a different payment after the time that they had had an NFS check pass or registration? Transferring titles of registration, also certain issues there. As they had testified previously, they do collect filing fees for these fees or for these transactions. And I guess, personally, the better way to deal with this would be allow them an increase in their filing fee, perhaps, to deal with to cover those transaction costs on their credit cards, rather than having us go into the business of collecting the debt for these bad checks.
Questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, in my old job, I actually had to suspend agricultural licenses, private pesticide applicator licenses, other pesticide applicator licenses. There weren't that many, but there were a few, and sometimes a suspension is what it took to finally get some people to pay. Do you see any difference between, say, an agricultural license and the DNR licenses if we're having to, that there should be consistency there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, part of the confusion is that once these licenses are adhered onto the vehicles, unless you are in the process of getting a ticket for a violation, no one's going to know. I think Representative Cornish can correct me if I'm wrong, but the average stop for a safety check or something like that in the field, the officer will not be running a background check or calling into the highway department or anything to verify that registration. So that tool, I agree with you, would be an equity issue, but the applicability of this sticker, the registration system we have, unless you're in the process of getting a written violation, no one's going to find out.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, when we would take a license, someone would write the check, we would be notified by the bank that it bounced, and then I would write the letter out to the individual suspending the license. So I'm still not quite sure. Now, I understand about a sticker over a period of time, but you've got that initial writing of a check that goes there, and somebody's being notified that it bounced. So if that notification comes, that's the point where you can do the suspension. And we would do this on a number of things where revenue would notify us or the bank would notify us, and it wasn't that many, and I literally had to write out the suspension letter. So if you can help clarify this, because you've got a period of time when the check is going to bounce, it's really close to when you write it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, again, that if this were to go through and the contracts would be negotiated, I think similar to what other agencies are doing, DPS, that letter would go through, but that doesn't force anyone to go back and correct that payment. They would still have the sticker, they would still have their equipment properly identified as a legally registered piece of machinery, and unless they cause a major violation. Snowmobile trail sticker is a perfect example. This bill would cover the person who comes in and buys 5 snowmobile trail stickers. If they bought them for 3 years, it would be $30 or $150. Representative Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, $30 a piece for the 3-year period. The check could bounce. They would have those stickers adhered on their machines, and unless they were stopped for speeding or some other kind of violation, the conservation officer would think that they are currently registered to use those. The letter would go out to those individuals, but that's still not going to force them to solve that NSF check issue.
So, Hansen.
Mr. Chair, that would be the same thing that would apply with the private pesticide applicator if they were caught And then we would look up, because everything is integrated into a computer system. When you find the violation, then you check, and then that's an additional violation that has a multiplier effect. So that was a 3-year license as well that we would do that on. So I'm not sure there's any difference here, and I would support the bill.
Representative Dill.
Thank you. Mr. Meyer, when DNR takes the credit card over the Internet, you take the 3% out of your take, as I understood you testifying. When the ELS agent takes a credit card for a license issued on an ELS, I think I heard you say that they either eat it or they increase their fee by 3%. Is that correct? Or do you go ahead and eat that too?
Meyer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, there was some legislation that we passed last year that does allow ELS agents the flexibility to charge, I think it's a 50-cent fee per transaction on the 3 licenses. The other licenses, there's a small transaction fee that covers that as well.
Well, thank you for that clarification. And then I guess the question is, we're not on the bill, Mr. Chairman. We're talking about credit cards, and I'd like to know, since we're talking about credit cards, and Mr. Hurst, how much relief from these bad checks does the association believe they'd get if they took credit cards? I mean, would checks evaporate? Would their business go down? You know, I think you know where I'm going with that question.
Representative Dill, when we get done with Mr. Meyer here,
okay.
we'll bring Mr. Hurst back up.
Okay.
Representative Killer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Meyer, I'm just trying to follow your logic, and frankly, I'm having a little bit of trouble here today because isn't it true that the logic you're giving to support a vote against this bill is the same situation that exists today? I mean, if people bounce a check, they have the sticker, they get to move forward, nobody knows about it, nobody does anything about it. So, I mean, no one's trying to make you the collection agency here. I just think this seems like common sense. If we do this for driver and vehicle services, why would we not do this on something where we regulate heavily what the deputy registrars can do? And frankly, unless we're willing, and it's so nice of you to say that you'd be willing to support increasing their fees today, that's really generous. However, the fact of the matter remains that you're not being made into the collection agency. You are being made the stop point so that when somebody comes back in to re-register this thing, whatever it is, to get whatever they need to do done, if they try to sell it and transfer it, you know, that's the stop point. I just think, you know, this is extreme situations. This is after a collection letter has gone out. It's most likely after a collection phone call has gone out. You know, I bet, you know, they will probably make people aware at their stations that if you are charged for not sufficient funds, you are in violation and could have your registration. Just help me with your logic. How does your logic differ from what's happening today in terms of that people get their stickers, they can go out in their canoe, in their boat, in their whatever for 3 years and be skating free? You're talking about a free rider problem with a bunch of bad actors. How is this different?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kelleher, it is not, except for the fact that it will present some workload issues for the department that we will then have to figure out how we're going to fund that activity. And also, like I said in the beginning, the biggest fear is that how does this impact those 2.3 other million licenses that we sell that are sold statewide for us to come through, and if it were transferred on to them, if this ability was then amended on to include all of the licenses that the DNR sells, it would become a substantial workload issue.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Killer,
Mr. Meyer, I'm sorry, but you're sort of using this argument about almost like the sky is falling here, like it's going to be on all things. And, you know, what these folks are asking for is a very specific use of this. And frankly, you know, just as you said you'd support a little increase for deputy registrars, I would be willing to support a little increase for the department if this is going to put such a burden that we're, you know, talking about tons of FTE. My guess is we're not talking about tons of FTE here. We're really talking about a very small number of bad actors who are not, as Representative Hartman said, keeping the deal on what they say they're doing when they write the check. It's a real problem.
Representative Pennis.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you, Representative Kelleher. you asked most of the questions. There's only one left that I see, and that is, if we do nothing, who holds the bag?
Right.
Just, who holds the bag? It's our first testifiers. So, it's not the DNR that holds the bag. And I don't think we're talking big man hours, otherwise I don't want to get sexist on this, but hire one good woman.
Mr. Hurst, would you like to come back up to the table? Our Representative Dill is left now. Representative Wiggins, for the DNR?
Yes, if I could. Aren't these
wrecks
all computerized?
Which Maya?
Mr. Chair, yes. Representative Wiggins there.
Representative Wiggins.
Then that keeps and down. It's
taking a lot of people
person. I mean, if they weren't computerized, they should be, but if they are, I don't understand why
then
you just don't do it all.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chair, there would be a small ELS reprogramming. The letters that Representative Hansen talked about would be sent out. They would have to be, you know, handled and dealt with that way, but most of the records would be computerized. Depending on the numbers, there could be, we estimate a quarter to a half FTE initially. If it gets expanded, which I know is not a good argument, but I sat in tax committee today and I saw a bill take many different forms this morning. I know how this process works, and that is my biggest fear. And though it might not be a good one, it is a relevant one for the department to have.
Okay. Mr. Hurst, would you like to come back up? Do you have any final... Did you hear Representative Dill's question? Maybe you can address that. Members, I'd like to move on. We've got a couple more bills we have to get through.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'll be very brief. This bill does not pertain to game and fish licenses, nor is it our intention to expand it into that arena. It's limited in its scope to those types of vehicles that are covered in the bill. I guess that's about all I have. And unfortunately, I don't recall what Representative Dill's question was. I believe it had something to do with credit cards. And certainly, if we could take credit cards, we would love it.
Well, members, this bill has to go to Representative Osmond's Community and Environment Natural Resources Finance Committee, and Representative Dill sits there, and he can bring up that question again at that particular time. Members, I'd like to move this bill on to Representative Osmond's Committee, and... as amended, I think we've had a number of discussions, quite extensive discussion on the policy side of this, and I think it's coming down to what it might cost the DNR to do this bill, and that's the proper place for this is in Representative Osmond's committee. So, members, I would like to renew my motion that House File 3436 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Ag Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee as amended. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, motion prevails. Bill is moved on to the Environment Finance Committee. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Okay, members, let's see. We're going to take next House File 3353. Mr. Kelleher? Members, this is a bill that I was hoping that we could straighten this out last year and kind of slip through the cracks, and the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association has brought this forward this year, and I'd like to get this issue straightened out. Mr. Kelleher, could you explain our bill?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here for the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. Basically, the bill, as President Hackbarth alluded to, corrects a problem that we thought was fixed last year as well. If you're a private landowner and you do not purchase a deer license, there are no restrictions on when you can drive your own ATV on your own property. If you purchased a deer license, you're restricted to driving before shooting hours, between 11 and 2, and after shooting hours. If you are a private landowner and you have a pheasant license, you can ride your ATV anytime you want on your own property. It's just that the rule applies to deer licenses. And as I said, if you've purchased a deer license, you're restricted on your own property on what times you can drive an ATV. And we believe that private landowners should be able to ride their ATV as they wish, whether or not they purchased a deer license or not. It's literally that simple. That If you bought it just a pheasant license, you could go ride your ATV. But if you have a pheasant license and a deer license, you'd be restricted on those times.
Very good.
And this fixes that.
Members, Mr. Meyer, would you like to come down? Well, you come down anyway. I don't care. I've talked to the DNR about this bill and in including snowmobiles in this also. And, Mr. Meyer, do you have any idea how we change that or include snowmobiles? People that are maybe deer hunting in December, maybe bow hunting or muzzle loading, and might be using their snowmobile in late December, for example. Did you have a chance to look at that? Mr. Meyer, we could, if you want to look at that, and we can change it and gov off, you can do that too.
We can either fix it in your next stop, or we can, if you just give me a few minutes, I can...
Why don't we take care of it in gov off? So I just wanted to see if you had something prepared. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. The part you identified that if the landowner has got a license, deer license, you're correcting that. But we're also, as far as I can tell on line 1.12, we're allowing a person with the landowner's permission to operate the vehicle on that same land. So that now it's gone beyond the landowner. In my area where I live, a lot of the hunting on lands has to occur with written permission from the landowners. Have you looked at written permission on this type of approval? I guess what I'm wondering about, Mr. Keller, is will the conservation officers, how will they have any idea to know whether the person is operating the vehicle or snowmobile or whatever it's going to be here with permission or not? I mean, obviously, if somebody stopped me, I would just say yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cox, a number of years ago, the Deer Hunters Association and the farm groups worked on some trespass language, and the Deer Hunters Association printed up a bunch of little, like, business cards that allow the person to go up to the landowner and say, you know, I would like to hunt on your property. Do I have your permission? And have them sign the card. We sort of envisioned it working like that.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Keller. That's exactly what I have in my hunting jacket, is a little pile of those from the different areas where we go. But this doesn't say that. And I guess I was wondering what you wouldn't have objection to including a written permission. I focus on that because I don't see how the conservation officers would be able to tell, and I think that's why you did that when you had the addressing the trespass. If the person produced it, everything was fine, and they went on their way. I don't know if Representative Cornish has any thoughts on it, but I'm sure it's pretty difficult to tell otherwise without that written permission. Is that how you're thinking this would be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cox, I would suppose that if you wanted, that the committee would like to add a person with the landowner's written permission, that would be acceptable to us. And that's sort of how we envisioned it being.
Although the author of the bill does not agree with it.
No. I'm at the mercy of the chairman.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Keller, I have a question just on orange clothing requirements, if those would still be in place here for folks that are riding.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, it's been my experience during the deer season that some people wear blaze orange to go to the mailbox.
Representative Spaulding.
And that was my question was to that point. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering why the rule was put in there in the first place. Is it to protect the hunter from getting shot during deer season, or is it to protect the deer from being run down by ATVs? I'm just kind of wondering what the purpose of the original rule was or law.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scalzi, my understanding is that it was about the ATVs themselves and the noise and the intrusion on other people's hunts. But what we're trying to clarify is this is private property, and that hopefully the only people on that property are people with the owner's permission. If they want to ride ATVs around their fellow hunters, then that's up to them.
Very good. Members, I think we've just gotten notice here that from the DNR, there's a couple of places here that we just have to add in or snowmobile to straighten this out. And on line 8, between the word vehicle and on, insert or snowmobile. And on line 11, between vehicle and is, insert or snowmobile. And on line 12, between vehicle and on, at the end of that sentence, insert or snowmobile. And that takes care of it, and in the title.
Yeah.
Mr. Allen, do you have that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Everybody understand that amendment? All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, motion prevails, amendment's adopted. Any further discussion to the bill? Yes. I'm sorry, what?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. This issue did raise some concern in the area that I represent, and I have a number of deer hunters and a number of private landowners who have licenses who are questioning whether or not they had the legal authority to drive their ATV while deer hunting season was occurring this year. And so I want to thank you for bringing this forward to clarify this, and I know there will be many happy deer hunters with ATVs out there next year. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Welty. I've gotten a lot of phone calls too. Thank you very much. Representative.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kelleher, you'll be able to have on the, it doesn't say it in here, but I believe that you can be able to haul or have a gun properly cased on the ATV during all of the hours that you would want to operate during deer season. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, it's my understanding that it would act as if you were pheasant hunting, that if you have a case on your ATV and the gun is unloaded and cased, that that's the same application.
Is that your understanding, Mr. Chairman?
That would be my understanding,
okay.
Representative Dill.
Thank you.
I will double-check with the DNR, Mr. Chair.
Anything further? And the Chair renews his motion that House File 3353 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Veterans Affairs Policy Committee as amended. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. The House File 3353 is referred. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next, Representative Pinnis. Mm-hmm. Representative Pinnis moves House File 3614. Let's see, what are we doing with that bill?
General Register.
Representative Pinnis moves House File 3614. Be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, there is an amendment. If
Representative Pennis moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the safe shape that you'd like. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Okay.
Aye. All opposed. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Pennis, could you explain your bill as amended?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just have to say before I start, I have seen, at my age, I have seen almost everything and living where I do add to what I've seen. I've never seen a ATV run down a deer, but life is always full of new experiences, I guess. Anyway, to this bill, under the current registration, all-terrain vehicles, utility all-terrain vehicles, are registered under the category of off-road vehicles. This means that the utility vehicles, like the Arctic Cat Prowler, Polaris Ranger, John Deere Gator, somebody will help me, I think, with others. But there are several, are all registered as off-road vehicles. So they are in the same class in Minnesota as the four-wheel drive trucks or motor trucks or large vehicles. They more closely resemble an ATV. And on the back of the sheet that you have, you'll see that in 21 states, they are, in fact, registered the same as an ATV. And in five states, they are on a separate class, and it's called a Class 2. There are some differences in it, but this house file would create a new registration category for those utility vehicles. So there'd be Class 1 is the normal ATV. Class 2 would be this utility vehicle, which would range in weight from 900 to 1,500 pounds. Currently, the weight for an ATV is to 900 pounds. The other main difference is that they are a little bit wider, approximately 12 inches wider in the tire span. Utility vehicles can have four or six wheels. They typically have bucket seats, four for a bench seat. They're designed for one operator or two operators. They also, I want to emphasize, have seat belts with very noticeable decals that say buckle up. They have a lower speed than an ATV. They are used typically by a multitude of people, but older people like my husband and I use one extensively. That way we can visit while we go. In fact, the first picture could be one of our grandchildren and us, except my hair is grayer, his is darker, and he has a mustache. But otherwise, same difference. Representative Jill, I think, can attest to the uses, and he may want to make comment after I finish, about utility vehicles for running errands. They are also popular for recreational riding because of the reason I said already, two people could visit, and you also are going, you're going slower. It's just a little bit bigger vehicle. There are about 3,000 utility vehicles in the state of Minnesota right now. They are not only popular with older riders, but also disabled riders. And like I say, a lot of grandpa and grandmas use them to take their grandchildren for a ride, and we haven't lost either one of ours yet, although one dog, I think, fell off once. 26 states then already realize that these fall into the ATV category, and what I'm asking for in this bill is that we put them in a class 2, which would be an ATV. To the bill, Mr. Chair, directly, Section 1 addresses the current definition of ATVs and changes to say there's two classes of ATVs. And you'll notice the change in weight. Section 2 adds the class, defines the class 1. Section 3 defines class 2. Section 4 prohibits the age of the operator of a class 2 under to be over 16 or older, whereas in normal class 1, it's 12 years of age or older. So this is raising that. Section 5 says that class 2 ATV may carry an operator and up to two passengers. And that would be the bench seat type, but anyway, can carry up to two passengers. Incidentally, there are seat belts for three people on a bench seat. Section 6 makes it clear that it can be used for hunting purposes, the same way ORVs are used. Section 7 prohibits class 2, this type of utility vehicle, from being ridden in the ditch. That's, you know, class one vehicles can, class two no. They may be ridden on the shoulder of the road, and this is very important to farmers in the state, where they need to move from one parcel of land to another, and that was Representative Aaron Peterson's concern, who signed on to the bill. And let me just tell you, from my own point of view, on our farm, our farm is not all contiguous. So we have land in four different sections. And if we would go on a county state aid highway, we're breaking the law. In the county I'm in, we get by with it. I mean, nobody's out there to, I know. But, you know, let's try and obey the law. Section 8 says that a class 2 can be ridden on forest roads where they are legal and minimum maintenance roads where they are legal, or trails, which the DNR may designate for future use. They cannot be ridden on ATV trails. Not going there. It's important to know that we're not saying the DNR must designate trails. We're just leaving the option open that if in the future they decide to, then they could be ridden there. Section 9 provides for the transition for the registration of utility vehicles as ORVs to Class 2 ATV registration. And finally, Section 10 is the DNR suggested effective date, which would be 2007. And now I will take questions.
Nice job, Representative Pennis. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pennis, I, in the color handout that you have here, on the back page, it looks like there's a guy hauling generator and fuel and so forth at a construction site, and on the front page, it looks like somebody's hauling firewood in that middle picture and so forth. And obviously, these machines are very capable of hauling their loads and designed for some of these applications like that. In fact, we see them from time to time in those uses. I am concerned about uses when we just open these things up to what I will consider recreational use, and in that you have increased the weight. They're heavier. We acknowledge that. Basically, if you have a four-wheel unit, like is shown in some of these pictures, you're carrying four times the load on the same number of wheels. So if they're going where they're designed to go or where you want to send them in this bill, that probably isn't a problem, because as the pictures also show, an awful lot of these are on some pretty good roads. Either on the farm pictures here and so forth, it looks like they can take that. My question is, in Section 8 of your bill, it says they're going to be restricted to trails that the assume the DNR is going to designate or sign for these Class 2 vehicles. I don't know how that's going to happen. I know the legislature, weren't able to wait for the DNR to review the trails for the ATV use, and I don't know how we're going to get this done. And then, lastly, you're keeping track of them, how are you going to enforce this? If there are trails that really are out there, then how do we know where these are going?
Okay. First of all, Mr. Chair and Representative, we're not saying they have to, okay? Right now, they can already go on forest road because they're an off-road, that's the way they register. So, you know, we're putting that in. Should the DNR decide to, in the future, looking ahead, have some trails that were for a Class 2 vehicle? Okay, so does that answer one of your questions? And also, in reading the whole set of rules for ATVs are off and off-road, you know, hauling wood and some of those are already legal. The second part of your question, let's assume people do right until they do wrong. This, every time we do something, we have to have more, you know, COs or sheriff or whatever. I really wish I'd bring the ads that we run up there on how to use ATVs and be good stewards of the land. I think everybody should hear it here.
Mr. Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What you indicated is they can go on trails now. Now, if somebody registered these as an ATV, they could actually ride on an ATV trail. But now, did I hear from your testimony that they're not being registered as ATVs now? Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Pennis, Representative Cox, this is the problem. This is why this bill is here, because they're all over the place. Some of these things are being registered as ATVs. Some of these things are being registered as off-highway trucks, and it's all over the place, and we're trying to fix that situation. We're trying to limit them to where they can ride. It's actually more trying to regulate these things more than we're just trying to, you know, make these things compliant. And I think that's why this bill is here, and setting a separate class for these things, and they're not going to be on all the ATV trails. That's why we're trying to spell out here exactly where they're going to be. They're going to maybe be on the main corridors, We can bring the DNR down here if you'd like to have them come and speak to that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Is there somebody from Trails and Waterways here that can speak to this issue? And I think that's what we're trying to get to. It's not that these things are going to be out on the ATV trails.
Mr. Chair?
No.
And Representative Tennis, while the DNR is coming to the table, that's what I'm trying to figure out is because I don't see right now. I understand your concerns, and I appreciate that, because if some people are registered, and it sounds like you might actually, if you went into a registration, maybe they would give it an ATV license. And if they don't, that's good, but because then they wouldn't be on ATV trails. My question is how do these people know? Do they know, number one, and number two, what is the DNR going to do? How do they tell them where to go?
Mr. Zanger, please state your name and who you represent for the record. Maybe you can explain this and shed some light on this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Danger, Trails, DNR Trails and Waterways. From the legislation, what I can tell is basically they've split ATVs, the small ones, and created another class for Class 2 ATVs. In the designation process, this allows us to set up trails specifically for the Class 2 ATVs. So they're kind of the same, but they're different.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do understand that, Mr. Daniel. What I'm questioning is, are you going to do it? Because if you don't do the trails and set them up, we've then created a procedure where we're going to license them and send them out there.
No.
I don't know where they're going to run, and I'm not sure if they do. I guess maybe somebody could explain that.
Mr. Danger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Cox, you know, what I'm asking for, and I've told my husband, you're a fool, you buy a license to go nowhere. Now, all I want to do is buy a license that I go where I'm supposed to. And so even from one farm or one piece of parcel land to the next, it is legal. Okay, because you license them as an ORV. Now, we can go on forest roads right now. We can go on some minimum maintenance roads. It depends upon, for example, our township has some minimum maintenance roads, and they, you know, have passed resolutions that it's okay to be on. And I'm sure there's some that have passed resolutions that say you can't. So, I don't know how you get by licensing these as an ATV, because the weight's too much.
Mr. Danger?
Mr. Chairman, I should point also, I believe Section 8, Subdivision 8, the way it's stated here, also gives the department clear direction on what they can be on, such as public, forest roads, minimum maintenance roads, and trails designated. There are other statutes in here that, such as cross-country travel, that kind of stuff, that's allowed for ATVs for hunting. This will keep that from happening for the Class 2. So there's other reasons for this language the way it's stated. It does be more restrictive than the ATVs.
A little more restrictive than I'd like. Representative Cornish.
Sure, remember, I think it's a good bill. It defines what an ATV is, and it defines what the next class. It puts into two different classes. The ATV has always been designed in a certain way with flotation tires, a certain weight. This creates another class and delineates what this new class can do, and it's actually more restrictive. It keeps them off of more areas, and so I think in the ATV manual also, they've got a nice little pamphlet the DNR does where they put nice pictures and definitions, and with a little work they can change it around with new regulations and educate people where they what they can and can't do. So I think it's a good bill.
Thank you. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the bill that we had before us just before this one passes, those provisions your understanding would apply to this class if this bill passes. Is that correct? I'm referring to the hunting on private land. Is that what I heard said in here?
That's how I would interpret it, yes.
So, okay. if you're, I'm just thinking that maybe there needs to, we need to hear from somebody that would give us more of an official interpretation as they understand it. I want to make sure that it is. I want to make sure that we're not doing it
as
twice.
As long as the first bill didn't say class one or class two, it right. just said ATV.
Just said ATV. Okay. Satisfied with that? I am.
Okay. Ripson Westrum, do you have a...
Mr. Chair, I have an amendment. Should fit right into this discussion.
We're passing it out now.
Okay.
Let's explain it.
This would, under Minnesota statutes, we have several vehicles that we recognize as motor vehicles, motorcycles, mopeds, probably are the two closest. But this would allow people to drive on state, county, or local roads, not interstates, but with ATVs. This issue came to me this fall, and I actually thought people could license their ATVs and drive into town, go to the accountant, go to the grocery store. And my constituents were asking me, with the gas prices as high as they were, why they couldn't drive their ATVs to town. You could drive a motorcycle to town if you get the proper lights and blinkers and stuff. And so this would allow that to happen. And they suggested that there was you can get better mileage with ATVs than a lot of their vehicles. Mr. Chair, I did some research and asked one of our staff to check into that. And as I understand it, and maybe somebody from the industry could quickly confirm it, I understand there are some ATVs that get pretty good mileage and some that maybe are down around 20 miles to the gallon. So I think it's true in most cases they would get pretty good mileage compared to a vehicle. But with the industry we have here in Minnesota, the other vehicles that we allow to be licensed and travel our roads, I would like to see us allow citizens that want to use their ATV to run across town in the small town Elbow Lake or Roseau or wherever it is, or live a mile or two out of town and need to run to town to get something to use their ATVs. I think that makes sense.
Well, Representative Westrum, I have to agree with you. I think we should do something like this. We should move in this direction. I don't know if this is the right time and the right place to do it, or this is the right year to do it. But members, this is very, very popular over in Europe. In France, this is very popular. This is what they've got in France. We could bring somebody forward at a later date to talk about this. But in France, these are very, very popular ATVs with turn signals and lights.
Yeah.
And
well, Mr. Chairman,
very, very popular issue. Representative Dill?
Well, it's pretty popular in Orr and Bike and Ray and Crane Lake and a lot of other places right now without the amendment.
Right.
And I had a question, though, Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. And I do not know the answer. I have no idea where this goes. But a slow-moving vehicle sign like they put on a farm tractor or an Amish buggy or anything like that, if you put one of those on an ATV, can you operate it on a road now?
That would be a good question, Representative Dill. I don't know. I'd have to ask somebody in transportation.
I don't know, but I know that one of our farmers got picked up because he had a slow-moving vehicle sign on his tractor. And he was moving too slow. So, I mean, yes.
Mr. Chair, not from Western, waste much time. Would there be anybody from the industry that we could just ask if they know what mileage ATVs get and just any brief comments? And Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that I want a vote, but maybe it would be some information we could have just to go forward with.
Boy, Representative Westrum's, the ones that I have get anywhere from 30 some miles to the gallon to 50 some miles to the gallon. Depending on what it is and how big it is.
Mr. Chair, I will get that information and I will get it to Representative Westrum. I also know that in Europe, as you said, the ones that they use there are designed for being on road,
right. Yep.
For
tires.
A vehicle for
different
transportation.
Tires. Yep.
The tires are different. They
they're made to be on road.
Brakes.
Mm-hmm.
are probably the same. I don't know.
They're made to be on the books.
Anyway.
Some of those issues maybe need to be worked out with the chair. I'll withdraw this amendment. But I'd look forward to working with the author and you, Mr. Chair, to try to advance that.
I'd like to do that with your
Attorney Washington. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, back to the bill. On the bill, House File 3614. Any further discussion?
Yes, sir.
Do we have any amendments? Okay, Representative Penos renews her motion that House File 3614 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register as amended. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion prevails. 3614 is passed and sent to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Penis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Members, we will be meeting tomorrow, not our regularly scheduled place or time. We'll be meeting at 4:30 tomorrow afternoon in Room 10. We will be bringing up Representative McNamara's Game and Fish Bill and trying to wrap that up. And we'll have a few other bills on the agenda as well. With that, members, meeting adjourned.